Hour number two, welcome in on this Full Send Friday. So happy to be here with you until 1 o'clock. 615-737-1045 is how you let your voice be heard on the show. Lucas is back in the studio. I am live out at Greystone Golf Club in Dixon, Tennessee. We are very happy to be out here for the Fight DMD 12th Annual Golf for a Cure event that is taking place right now. A special thanks to TriStar Bank, Cornerstone Mechanical, McClure Eye Center, Flow Construction, and thehomeloanexpert.com. It's a great cause that they're raising money for the Duchenne muscular dystrophy and how to combat that particular disease and generate funds to see if they can find better treatment plans. That's basically what all this is about today, and we're very happy to be able to help them raise money to do so. If you want to learn more or participate in the fundraising effort, you can go to fightdmdtrial.com for more info. We spent a lot of time on the Vols in the first hour with John Reed. We were talking about what can you legitimately learn from Tennessee Tech this weekend? What can you kind of hope to accomplish and build upon before SEC play begins next week? With Florida, it's such a weird situation because Dan Mullen is somebody who, I don't know about you, Lucas, but like Dan Mullen doesn't strike me as a great head coach. Now, maybe it's just because he finds ways to win, not even through recruiting at this point, but he's been great at acquiring talent through the transfer portal. We know that he's capable of scheming up offense and finding coordinators who can execute his offense and that Florida has no shortage of talent. But to have a conversation about competitiveness in this game, it has to start with the execution at quarterback. And what are you going to learn from the execution at quarterback for the Florida game against an opponent like Tennessee Tech? Are there legitimate lessons that can be translated from week to week, or is it just about technique, fundamentals, executing the offense, getting up and down the field, and not making these mistakes that have cost them literally three touchdowns in the first half because Joe Milton can't hit a layup? We've spent a lot of time on this over the course of today, and we'll talk about it at great length. Your phone calls are welcome, 615-737-1045. We'll also spend some time on the Titans because I'm getting ready to leave for Seattle tomorrow morning. This game against the Seahawks is going to be tough sledding, and Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio will be with us at 1220 to help us break it all down. So we'll go to the phones first and foremost, if you would like to get involved. Danny is in the Borough, and he wants to weigh in on the Vols. What's up, Danny?
Hey, what up, Buck? So, I have no interest in seeing Milton start this game, and it's not because I don't think Milton has talent or doesn't have a future with this program and with our team. What I want to see, though, is I want to see Hendon Hooker be named the starter for this game. I want to see him go out and lead the offense and have the scripted plays that Heupel is known for in this high-paced offense coming out of the gate, and I want to see what he can do with it against Tennessee Tech. I want to see if there's some kind of script that we can come up with where we're in a groove and he can lead that offense and not miss those layups, because I have no reason to blame Heupel for anything so far because his offense has worked and the points have been there. It's been execution by the quarterback that has been the problem. Hendon Hooker still leads this team in passing and has not yet surpassed 200 yards. That's a problem in Josh Heupel's offense. The kid deserves a chance to get the start, show us what he's made of, and earn the team's respect before we go into Florida. And that's what I really want to see if he can do, is if we can go into the swamp with a little bit of attitude, we might not get smacked around as bad as if we go in there flat.
Hey, stay with me for a second, Danny, because I think you bring up a good point. But you're talking about scripting plays and things of that nature. The Vols have done that through the first two games pretty well, right? It's just when the script goes away in the second quarter, and then they kind of fall flat now back-to-back games. That seems to be a trend. Is that not your observation as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when that script falls apart, that's when Hooker's been in the game, right? So I want to see him in the game at the start, running that script, owning the offense, and leading the team. And I think if he's given the opportunity to do that from the jump, it's going to change a lot of the attitude of play. And those wide-open layups are going to get the crowd involved early on. I don't care if it's Tennessee Tech, the Vol fan. Shoot, man, I'm new to the fan base. I'm hungry for it. Go Big Orange. I want to see it, but I want to see Hooker throwing the ball to start. Shot, and he blew it three times. Hey, twice in one freaking series, Buck.
Yeah, there is that. Thank you for the call, Danny. You sound like Lucas. I'm trying to imagine the scenario where we come in on Monday, and you know, there's a good possibility that I'm going to be cranky because I'm on the red eye back from Seattle after the Titans play the Seahawks. So maybe I'm not going to be in the best of moods. But I'm trying to imagine the scenario where Lucas comes in on Monday morning as a Vols fan and is in a bad mood because of what happens against Tennessee Tech. What situation do I have to put you and your football team in, Lucas, for you to feel disappointed with the result against Tennessee Tech? Does one such situation exist, or is it just all gravy, get me to Florida?
Well, no, it's if you don't see progress at the quarterback position, then yeah. I mean, nobody's going to feel good after Tennessee Tech. Doesn't matter how much you beat them by. If you see
it's
the
such a ridiculous scenario to imagine how they come out looking bad against Tennessee Tech. And I got some DMs about this because apparently we have some Tennessee Tech alums in our audience, and that shot me a couple of DMs, which is totally fair. But, like, you know, you have to also acknowledge what Tennessee Tech is as a football program, and it's not one that plays in the SEC. We're talking about an SEC team playing an FCS program. It's not something that you can be like, hey, don't sleep on Tennessee Tech. No, Tennessee Tech is literally being paid to be slept on. That's why they're playing in this game.
Yeah, I wonder, you think they'll cooperate?
if they were playing Vandy, Clark Lee would sure hope so. 615-737-1045 is the number. Scott is in Bethpage, and I'm certain that he has an opinion on the Vols. What's up, Scott?
Hey, good morning, guys. Buck, I'll just go ahead and say this. If you give me the kind of time on the show that you give some of these other people, especially that guy you gave 5 minutes to, I'm taking your position, and I'm keeping Lucas with me.
Listen to me, Scott. I start timing them if they get like to be egregiously long, because our record is 526. I realize that they're terrible, but I almost like to sink into how bad that they get when they start to tail off. So that's, you know, that's just me. That's me enjoying myself a little bit. Let me have this small pleasure.
You give me 5 minutes, and the Zone's got a new radio show host.
You got 4 minutes, Scott.
Here you go. You're on the time.
This is the very last time that I call talking about the Tennessee quarterback situation. We know
true.
What we have.
I don't believe that for a second.
It's not true, Scott.
I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
Just saying it's not true. There's no way this is the last time you call us about the Tennessee quarterback.
I'm talking about the offensive line from here on out. I'm not calling to talk about the quarterback anymore. It's over. My contract is up on that. So what I said to Lucas, you know, off air, we've got to go into the Florida game with a clear-cut starter. Now, the difference between Hooker and Milton. Milton cost us 21 points. We've established that. When Milton got hurt and fumbled the ball in the process of getting hurt, if I'm not mistaken, we were 14 points down, or were soon to be 14 points down. Hooker brought us back, as well as our defense. Not only did Joe Milton cost us 21 points, but our defense and our special teams at the beginning of the game basically got us 10 points ahead. It's really, the writing is clearly on the wall. I'm afraid that they're going to give him another shot. The writing is clearly on the wall that this guy does not need to be our starting quarterback. He needs to be a serviceable backup, possibly, but not the starting quarterback. But the Florida game is very important, because if we go into the Florida game with mass confusion at who our starting quarterback is going to be, we lose the game in the first 15 minutes. If we go in with a clear-cut starter and our line is healthy and our running backs are healthy, we lose the game possibly toward the end of the third quarter. We would all like that better. But, you know, who knows? It's anybody's game. You know, you still got to play the game. We may win, we may not, but we have a better shot knowing who our quarterback is. This is based on 35 years of watching Tennessee football. So,
yep.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one, and feel free to rack me anytime.
Okay. Lucas, go ahead and rack him. Yeah, he deserves it. He's a liar. He's a liar if he thinks that's the last time that he's calling us to talk about the Vols quarterback situation. There's 0% chance, if Joe Milton or Hendon Hooker goes out there and poops themselves against Tennessee Tech, that Scott doesn't call us back the very next day to talk about the Tennessee quarterback.
But he makes a good point.
No, I mean, he's right. He's right. It doesn't, again, but he's still delusional if he thinks that's the last time that we have a conversation about the quarterback position. Let's have a conversation about a team that desperately needs, well, I don't want to say quarterbacking help, but certainly needs a little life on offense. Let's talk about the Tennessee Titans and their trip out to Seattle to face the Seahawks. Are they capable of staving off an 0-2 start to the season. The NFC West is undefeated after week one and did so rather decisively outside of the Lions trying to make a quick comeback on the San Francisco 49ers in their week one game. We'll talk about where the matchups lie and which ones benefit the Titans, if any. If you have an opinion, if you want to weigh in on the matchups that you're excited to watch or maybe something that you think needs to be improved upon in this game that you need to see tangible results, we welcome your participation. 615-737-1045. Buck Rising live here with you from Greystone Golf Club for the Fight DMD Golf for a Cure event here in Dixon, Tennessee. We're very excited to be out here. FightDMDTrial.com is where you can go to find out more info. What is this? Are we turning into a jukebox? Are we having listener requests here on the radio show?
This
welcome back.
Is the king of the Delta Blues, Robert Johnson.
I like it.
This is the man who sold his soul to the devil, Robert Johnson.
Are you talking about like, see, now when you say that, I think of the movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
No, this George is the Clooney? Man that went down to the crossroads and sold his soul to the devil and came back with the most insane talent for a guitar that anyone had ever seen in the Delta Blues.
Sure, but why are we hearkening back to such a historical time? What is the purpose of this trip back in history?
Well, Bucket requested it, and I will never deny a Robert Johnson bump.
All right, very good. 615-737-1045 is how you get in on the conversation, or apparently send Lucas song requests to bring us back from commercial break. So we want to talk about the Titans here. We've spent a lot of the show so far, the first half of the show, on the Vols. Don't forget, in an hour from now, Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio will join us, and we will break down this game in detail before Mac and myself and the whole Titans Radio crew, we head out to Seattle tomorrow morning to see if the Titans can't keep from starting their season 0-2. And they're in real danger of doing that at this point, given how poorly they played on Sunday against Arizona. It was a really, really surprising outcome, even if you thought that they were not going to be able to beat Arizona prior to that game being played. Here's the situation, and we'll talk about it at length. I'd be curious to hear your input. Where do you think the matchups favor the Titans on the field against Seattle? Because I think it's a pretty interesting question. I don't know how many people went back and watched the Colts and the Seahawks play in week one, Seattle traveling to Indianapolis and really handling the Colts without much issue. It didn't ever feel competitive the way that the defense for Seattle, they've got a young defensive front that features a former Tennessee Volunteer in Daryl Taylor, who just, I watched some of those clips back on the coach's film of Daryl Taylor one-on-one against Braden Smith, who signed a $72 million extension this offseason. Sound familiar? Plays right tackle, Braden Smith does. One of the more solid to above average tackles in football right now, and he certainly paid like one. And Taylor ragdolled him. Ragdolled him almost the entirety of the game, not just in pass pro, but in run blocking as well. He was able to shed his blocks. He was able to get into the gap and cause problems in the running game. They got the Colts off basically the same way that the Cardinals did the Titans, with the same kind of approach at the very least, which is Indianapolis wants to run the ball and create their passing game off of the run. That is what the Tennessee Titans like to do, and the Seahawks negated that immediately right out of the gate. So where can the Titans take advantage of their matchups? I have one place in particular that we spent a little time on yesterday to get into with you guys, but first we'll go to the phones. Now, Lucas texted me that Blue in Bellevue is on the line, and apparently it's not your Blue, so there is another Blue in the universe that is called into this Sports Talk radio show. What's up, Blue?
Hello. Long-time caller, or long-time listener, first-time caller.
I love it.
Just pretty much what you said, what I was going to harp on. That Seattle defensive line is terrifying. And after seeing how we played against that Cardinals defensive line, I'm very worried. But, you know, I believe in our boys. Let's go. Tighten up.
Okay. Blue's got some energy. So he is undeterred from the Titans potentially struggling against Seattle. It was pretty interesting to watch back that game. Now, I watched the condensed version. It took me about 33 minutes to get through four quarters of Seahawks-Colts and to kind of look at where they maximized Russell Wilson's efficiency, because he was great He was he had four touchdown passes. It was not a ton of attempts. They were handling the game with their defense and their running game. They were able to control the clock as a result, and they allowed Russell Wilson to play in structure. Russell Wilson, the whole let Russ cook thing is designed on Russell Wilson being, you know, depraved at the end of a game because Pete Carroll's ran it for three quarters, and he's just chucking the football into your end zone trying to get points out of desperation. That's not the Russell Wilson that played a game in his week one 2021 opener. This was a Russell Wilson that was very much more comfortable, less chaotic, and was super precise. The difference between, and you'll hear from Bradley McDougald, who was on our radio show yesterday, he'll be the starting safety in place of Amani Hooker, who has to miss at least 3 weeks on injured reserve. I asked Bradley yesterday what the difference, and he's played against Russell Wilson. He owns an interception off Russell Wilson, and he's also been his teammate for about 3 years prior to last year when he was traded to the New York Jets and then started the season, played seven games, and then ended the season on IR. Bradley McDougald, I asked him, you know, what's the difference between defending Kyler Murray and defending Russell Wilson? And this is what the Titans safety had to say.
It's a few different variations. Russ isn't really focused on running the ball as opposed to Kyler. You know, he has quarterback design runs, option football type running styles, but he does throw the ball, of course. But Russ is a little more focused on throwing the ball and running if need be. So I say that's probably one of the biggest differences. Russ has a lot more experiences, seen a lot more looks, playing a lot more games. So we have to combat that as well. No matter what call we go out there with, we just have to go out there and play with confidence and play fast.
So you know what that's a long way of saying? Can anybody tell me? What's the difference between Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson? Summarize that for me, Lucas, if you can. Are you capable? Can you boil that down into two words, let's say?
Won't run. I mean, he's not going to have the escapability that Kyler Murray had. He's not going to rely on that.
What do I got to do everything for you? No, the answer is he's better.
Oh, well, yeah.
Russell Wilson is better than Kyler Murray.
And that's after Kyler Murray with probably the best game of his pro career last week.
Kyler Murray had the best game of any quarterback in the sport on Sunday. Are you kidding me? Maybe outside of Dak Prescott, and Dak Prescott in a loss. Kyler Murray had a career day. Kyler Murray was playing in structure. The Cardinals figured out how to beat the Titans at their own game. We talked about this with Greg Cosell. They were running a bunch of 12 personnel, two tight end sets, two wide receivers, running the football. It was something we saw the Cardinals do, the air raid stuff, but they had clearly adapted their offense to go out there and play bully ball, and they did. Russell Wilson is better than Kyler Murray, and Kyler Murray just had a career day against the Titans defense that we keep getting told is better and that has a lot of new parts on that side of the ball, but there was precious little to indicate that they are a better football team or a better unit than the one that was historically bad a year ago. When you average north of 51% of your opponent's third downs that you allow them to convert, and you come out in the first game of the following season and give up north of 53% on third downs and allow your opponent to average 6.2 yards per play and 3.17 points per drive, that is horrendous. That is not a matchup that favors the Titans by any stretch of the imagination. But I want to talk about one that does, because it can't all be doom and gloom. I think the Titans are capable of, they're too talented to play as poorly as they did this past Sunday. There's just too much talent on the field. Now, what it kind of reminds me of, and we spent some time on this on Monday's show after the game, where they kind of remind me of the 2019 Cleveland Browns, where there's a lot of hype, there's a lot of excitement, it's a lot of preseason buildup, there's new pieces, new parts. Julio Jones is Odell Beckham in this particular situation, and everybody's talking about the Titans, and the Titans come out and they lay an egg, the way that Cleveland laid an egg against the Titans in that 2019 opener a couple of years ago when they constructed their version of this super team with Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry and Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, Myles Garrett, Baker Mayfield, and still that team is trying to find its way in the AFC, in the AFC playoff picture. But a matchup that I think favors the Titans in this particular regard is the wide receivers against Seattle's defensive back, because what Seattle is up front, they are not on the back end. Jamal Adams, and he played a lot more safety than I honestly expected him to against the Colts. Not as many times did you see him coming on blitzes. Not as many times did you see Jamal Adams rushing off the edge the way that we kind of associate him to do. He's been one of these parts that defensive coordinators like to move around, but that was not necessarily the case. But the corners for Seattle are not up to the caliber as the Titans wide receivers are. Now, in order for that to be an advantageous matchup, Todd Downing has to call plays that don't look like it did last week. And I know that sounds like basic analysis, and far be it for me to say that I could call a better game than Todd Downing, but I'm looking at the lack of adjustments that they made from one half to the next. And I'm looking at what we talked about, which is the Titans' offensive identity, where it's run the football, and then set up the pass off the run. That's the same formula that's made the Titans successful in years past, but it did not work against Arizona because Arizona had figured them out and figured out exactly how to stop it. Seattle is going to have that film available to them. The best thing that they did in that game offensively was, instead of running out there in two tight end sets, come out in the third quarter, spread the defense out, three wide receivers, one tight end, Derrick Henry in the backfield, and run the ball against favorable boxes. Not stacked boxes, not eight defenders, nine defenders, just sitting there at the line of scrimmage waiting for the 250-pound running back to just run into their face. That's exactly what the Titans did to start that game, and it worked to their detriment. They got too far behind. Things snowballed. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong from a protection standpoint, from an offensive line standpoint, from a defensive standpoint, from a special team standpoint, even down to a kicker. And again, they will have a new kicker, the 11th kicker, as Mike Vrabel said, the 53rd kicker that they've had since he's been here in Tennessee. For Todd Downing to take advantage of these matchups on the outside, he has to be comfortable starting the game and passing to run, not necessarily running the ball to set up the pass. And that is something that he has not yet been able to do, or at least through one game, was not able to figure out early enough to get them back into that game against Arizona. They'll have to do that against Seattle. 615-737-1045. What matchup favors the Titans on Sunday against the Seahawks? Is there one on either side of the ball that kind of jumps out to you? Let's go to Rob in Nashville, who wants to weigh in. What's up, Rob?
I think it could be possibly a close game because of receivers, but, you know, if they cannot, you know, run the ball, first of all, if they can't block, they don't have a chance anyway. If they look like they did, you know, on Sunday, just pass and not block, we're going to get a mirror of the same type of game. So, all I say is, you know, the Titans, they better really go in there mad and fired up. And my biggest concern in this game is the noise. Those guys there, they're good players and everything, but I'm curious to see, have they worked on as far as the crowd noise and being able to call out plays? That's all I got. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for the call. 615-737-1045 if you want to weigh in. So, Lucas, you're sending me screenshots. You're texting me screenshots of the Zone TV chat where you can watch the show live here from Greystone Golf Club for the Fight DMD tournament that we're happy to be out here and be a part of. Why are you sending me screenshots of the Zone TV chat, or am I going to Ron Burgundy this thing and read it without any kind of forewarning? Are you trying to send me a message? What am I missing?
No, I don't know if you have it in front of you or not, but Datsun Worldwide making some good points, just making sure our listeners on the chat are being heard.
Datsun Worldwide says, I'm convinced Vrabel's plan will be to force them into crowd the box, then they will run and pass at it, go right after best players, no going over or around anything. So is that alleging that the game plan is just going to be to stick to the game plan and be stubborn about it? Is that what he's trying to say?
I think that is what he's trying to say.
Well, that would be unfortunate because then your team would be 0-2. That's how you're going to start the season, if that's the way that the Titans approach this. And listen, there's a lot there to indicate that Mike Vrabel is going to do what Mike Vrabel wants to do, and this has been what Mike Vrabel wants to do. This is who he thinks his football team is. But again, I'd cite that quote that he gave us after the game against the Cardinals, where he's sitting in the press conference afterwards, and he's saying, yeah, we're going to find out on Monday what our culture is. Buddy, I thought this is what the culmination of the last 3 years was, is you developing and building upon your culture, not finding out what the culture is. This is the point where you're supposed to know and where the players are supposed to know. And so perhaps that's a good reset. Perhaps that has a bigger impact on Mike Vrabel than other losses have, because this one was an embarrassment. And they know collectively that they cannot come out and perform or not perform the way that they did against Arizona on Sunday. We'll have this conversation with Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio. He's going to join us at 12:20. Coming up next, though, I want to talk about something that happened with Nick Saban during the course of the week. This was brought to my attention earlier in the week, but Lucas did his job, and then, you know, I did what I do. I forgot that Lucas did his job well, and so we're just now getting to it. But on the other side, you're going to see a little bit of a side of Nick Saban that you've never seen before, or at least you're going to hear one. Coming up next, I'm Buck Rising. This is 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back. Live here from Greystone Golf Club in Dixon, Tennessee. Buck Rising here with you until 1 o'clock on 104.5 The Zone. Going to get back to the Titans conversation here in just a second, but Lucas has been after me all day long because we have a happy birthday that we have not yet gotten to. Now, this is a particularly, I don't know if, should we put his age out there, Lucas? You think that Rhett Bryan is comfortable with that?
He's the big 5-0. I saw it on Twitter earlier.
All right, so instead of protecting his potential sensitivities, you're just going to put him on blast. He's
50
years old.
A day over 30.
A very happy 50th birthday to Titans Radio's own Rhett Bryan.
Happy birthday to him. I don't care. Good luck.
Good luck on Sunday, Rhett.
Man, yesterday was one of the busiest days of Rhett Bryan's life. Probably the busiest day of his season with the Tigers radio preparation for week two in Seattle. And he did it all with a smile on his face. Rhett Bryan is the man.
No, he's a warrior. I mean, he's the best. Rhett Bryan has taught me so much about radio, and we are so much better. This show sounds so much better because we got Rhett Bryan to be the voice of all of our stupid little bits that we do. Speaking of stupid little bits, let's talk about what happened with Nick Saban this week. Now, this is a couple days old, and I texted Lucas today. I'm going to read the exact text exchange because I feel that's important for context. And maybe it's important for lack of context. Lucas, we have a poll up regarding this particular situation. Can you update us on the poll at your earliest convenience? Let me know when you have it, and we will read the poll for the audience. But this was the text conversation between Lucas Panzeca and myself. I texted him, 7:15 a.m. Said, can we find the Jordan Battle? Jordan Battle is an Alabama football player, for those of you who are unaware. I said, can we find Jordan Battle's sound of the Saban D's Nuts jokes? Lucas responds, I have it. I said, why have you been holding out on me for so long with such precious audio clips that we have to play? And he said, I sent it to you like 3 days ago. So the article that I'm looking at is from September 14th, but we didn't talk about this and we absolutely must.
Yeah, the poll results, we asked, is that a dad joke? And 60% say no.
Is what a dad joke? Don't be scared.
These nuts. Puka says, Lebowski says, what happened to you overnight? Jimmy Morris says, professional radio host right here, folks.
Oh, Jimmy Morris said that?
Yes. Josh said, yep, it started when I was in high school. Still funny.
What Jimmy neglects is that there's a lot of people putting in a lot of investment into the individual making those D's nuts jokes. So if Jimmy wants any professional advice, he can hit me up at any time. He has my number.
Is Nick Saban a professional?
Apparently he's a serious businessman. The man is not known for his sense of humor, although he seems to have a lighter side, because after they beat the holy hell out of Miami in the season opener for Alabama, one of his players comes up behind him, puts that leather football helmet on him. He, like, turns around like he's going to swing on the person at first because he doesn't recognize that it's one of his players. And then, you know, Nick Saban leans in on the joke with the 1930s leather football hat on. But this one made me laugh because Jordan Battle, he's the safety at Alabama, and he's being asked questions about, you know, Nick Saban coaching habits. Coaching sayings that he uses on the field and what Jordan Battle's favorite of those is. And this is the sound of Jordan Battle at the podium expressing what his favorite Nick Saban coaching cliche is.
Yeah, I've asked a couple of the other older guys about this, but do you have a favorite saying that Saban has, one of his little coaching, quips he has?
Not that I can think of right now because he has so many, but there are a few I like, and he always talking about touch D's or you know, suck on D's or all that.
Charlie.
I think he meant encouraging ones like so loud.
I can't even catch. I don't know how to follow that one up, but
Lucas, that is such incredible sound. What's your favorite part of that? Because there's so many elements of that we need to break down. That's a longer version of the clip than I had heard.
Yeah, it is definitely the Alabama PR person, the media relations person in the background. No.
All right, so I want to because it just creates this visual of a starting player at the University of Alabama who is coached on discipline and professionalism and, you know, this is the highest standard of college football in all the land. And he's talking about Nick Saban making D's nuts jokes at the podium in front of the media. And so listen to the sound again, because you can hear in the background somebody like just violent. It sounds like almost somebody's getting punched in the gut with the sound that this PR guy makes when he's chirping helplessly from the background. No, cut it out. Don't
so
say
many,
that.
But there are a few I like, and he always talking about touch D's or you know, suck on D's or all that.
It's just it's just from like another room. Like he hears it from the hallway and he just comes sprinting into the press conference room.
His worst
please
nightmare.
Don't. Because it's not the player that's going to get in trouble for that. And, you know, everybody's going to laugh because it looks like Nick Saban's an actual human instead of a football robot. But it's the PR guy who's going to get you.
Yeah.
That is the best possible. That is such an incredible sound. So now you told me that you found a response from Nick Saban on this allegation that Nick Saban likes these nuts jokes.
Yeah, on his coach's show, he was with Jim Dunaway, who I was thinking was in there as a guest. Anybody who spent any time in Alabama knows Jim Dunaway. He's done a lot of local TV, radio, worked for the Cumulus station at Jocks for a long time. Jim Dunaway embodies Alabama sports broadcasting, and he interviewed Nick Saban about it alongside Eli Gold.
Let's hear that sound.
Graphs and stuff. I was going to ask you if you need help holding something, but I didn't want to set you up for a joke. The Jordan Battle thing this week. Tell me about Jordan and your personality that comes out occasionally, leaks out. You have this great rapport with the players, and I bet a little bit of that happened this week with you and Jordan.
Well, you know, I do this kind of joking around a lot of times with the players. You know, I enjoy it. It's fun. Especially when we're like having flex or whatever, and you have these things that sort of become habits with different players. Like when Derrick Henry was here, you know, I'd walk by flex every day and I would say, "How you doing?" And, you know, we had this speaker that said, you know, you should always say glad to be here. You know, if you say to yourself, "I'm glad to be here," it makes you have gratitude for being here. You don't think about all the bad things. You start thinking about all the good things.
Right.
So every day I walk past Derrick Henry, he'd say, "Glad to be here, coach." And, you know, it was kind of uplifting to me because sometimes I would have my head down or I'd be worrying about, you know, what we're going to do or some player being hurt and who was going to take his place or whatever. And he'd say that and I'd say, "Yeah, I get to do this another day. You know, I'm glad to be here." All right. So I have a couple of my pet peeves. But most of them are, you know, it's to anybody's imagination what this is, what these are. I mean, so it doesn't mean it's whatever you think it is.
Right.
All right. Now, if you think it's something bad, then it's something bad. All right. But it doesn't have to be anything bad. It can be whatever you think it is.
Yeah.
So, and I like to get on Jordan Bell.
It's such an incredible visual to picture Nick Saban sitting down and like with the hand motions and with the, you know, the Coca-Cola bottle in front of him And he's talking through the idea that he makes these nuts jokes at practice on a radio show.
And that's at Baumhauer's in Alabama, which is a very popular sports bar. So there's people out there. You know, it's like Josh Heupel does it at Calhoun's on the river. Nick Saban does it at Baumhauer's in Tuscaloosa. So that's a lot of people are there in a crowd. And the smile that just creeps across his face when Dunaway asks him the question is amazing. Like, the dude has an awesome sense of humor that people do not see enough.
It's probably the worst part of press conferences. Like, whether I'm in a Mike Vrabel press conference or the Alabama media attending a Nick Saban press conference, Vrabel's pretty comfortable doing it. Like, Vrabel do a whole stand-up routine while he's ripping us at the press conferences, but Saban, we don't see that nearly enough. My buddy, now you know Joey Molinaro from Barstool, right? Who's like famously does the Nick Saban impression.
Oh yeah.
Somebody just tweeted me, because Joey, I guess, did like what his version of Nick Saban responding to this would be. I haven't had the opportunity to hear it. I don't know if it's safe for FCC radio. So instead, we probably ought to get out of here. We'll talk about the Titans coming up next. Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio will join us. I'm Buck Rising. This is 104.5 The Zone.